This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning. And Joe, you know I love me some college football. Love college football just about as much as I love anything in the sporting world. But I'm getting nervous about what's going on surrounding COVID-19 and everything surrounding the world of college football. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in Ryan McGee from ESPN. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I'm just, you know, I feel exactly the same way that you do. So we'll see.
Ryan, as you kind of view what's going on right now, and particularly what stood out to me anyway the last couple weeks, has obviously been Major League Baseball without the bubble and everything that's come up with the Phillies and the Cardinals and the Marlins. When you take that into account and then look ahead to a potential college football season in the fall, what are kind of your thoughts on the prospects of what we might see or not see when it comes to college football this fall?
Well, what I have said all along, and this goes all the way back to April, is what I have said from the jump when we all had to go in our houses and lock the door, is that is going to happen in college football was going to be dictated by what happened on the college campuses. And, you know, I keep throwing this example out but because I think it's a good one. But, you know, we all like to think, because we all live in the sports world, that, you know, college football runs everything and, you know, the budgets are huge and front porch of the university and all that. And it's true to a point. But the example I use is University of Florida. At the University of Florida, they have 103 football players, and their budget for the entire athletic department is about $145, $150 million. And they're easily one of the most successful athletic departments across all sports of the last 20 years. The student body at the University of Florida is 55,000 on-campus students. And the budget for the university last year was $6 billion. So at the end of the day, football is a speed bump. And so when the college students all start moving into dorms, at most of the big state schools, they start doing that next week. That's the reason that we're seeing launch dates of seasons of August 19th and August 26th, and almost September 19th and 26th, almost into October, because they're going to wait and see what happens on the university campus. And you guys know, just like I know, that if college students act like college students, this is not going to be a great situation when it comes to trying to slow down the spread of anything. And so that's the part that I've been screaming all along. And so, you know, you hate to scream more patience, but the reality is that we're going to know a lot more a month from now than we do now, because the students will have been okay. And this is the concern that the college football players of the Pac-12 and the SEC, we know now, they've been very vocal about, and I think it's a super, super valid concern.
Yeah, you mentioned the Pac-12, Ryan. Obviously, press release, I guess it was released on the Players Tribune yesterday initially, but several players from the Pac-12 kind of come together, put out a list of comments with some personal, you know, stories, but also a list of demands. What's your initial takeaway from, you know, what they're asking for and how you think that will play out?
Well, it was a long list of concerns, but the most urgent right now, and we learned about this, you know, with the conference call that happened with the SEC, representatives of each SEC team player-wise, and representatives from the conference and medical officials and all that. And, you know, their biggest they have broader concerns, as we all do these days, with, you know, thankfully, you know, the much more vocal Black Lives Matter movement and the demand for social change. But the immediate concern right now is, and this is at the top of the list for everyone, especially that the list of demands from the Pac-12 athletes, which is they need assurances that their safety is first and foremost, and that they're not just, you know, one of the players use the word lab rat, and, you know, they want to make sure that everything's being done to keep them safe. And I think that's a really, really, I mean, it's the most basic thing is, are you taking care of me? Because that's what you promised when you stood in my living room and told my mom and dad that if I came and played football here, I'd be taken care of. And so that's their biggest concern, is just making sure that they're not going to be put in a position where, you know, it's going to be dangerous for them, but more importantly to them, it's going to be dangerous for their families, you know, when they go home. And so the concern, again, what you heard from the athletes and what you're hearing from the athletes, it's not about being in the football building. It's not about being in the workout room. It's not about being in the meeting room. It's about sitting in history class. And those are the concerns that the players have had. And, again, I think it's 100% justified. And there hasn't been a great answer yet. And one of the athletes said during the SEC call on Wednesday, you know, the Washington Post had the transcript of it, and one of the athletes said, this isn't good enough. And so that's where the concern is. And now, you know, it's time for people to start moving into dorms. And the football players are already on campus. They're already in buildings. They've been there since June 1st, most of them. But now the other 35,000 students are coming. And that's where it gets tense.
Ryan McGee on the line with us from ESPN. And, Ryan, you wrote a great piece about, you know, how the word normal in college football doesn't really apply this year, including a great encounter with a fan on the beach. You can check that out at ESPN.com. But as college football fans, as you know, Ryan, in the Nashville area, college football is a huge deal around here. People are very passionate about it and want to be optimistic about their beloved sport taking place. What would kind of your advice be, or what your thoughts are as a college football fan, and how to view what could happen, whether it's in the fall or in the spring, and what the optimism level should be?
Well, I think that suddenly, you know, I think a lot of the people who were skeptical about the whole flatten the curve idea probably now understand why that was important. And, you know, a lot of people were screaming back in April and May. You know, I know it's not any fun to have to stay 6 feet apart and to not get to see your friends and family and to have to wear a mask when it's 98 degrees outside. But the reality is that because the numbers aren't flattened, like we were, if everything could continue the way it was in April and May, we'd be playing football and not even having any question about it. We might just, you know, be cutting fans in half and that's it. But now, you know, what I tell everyone is that I know it's a pain in the butt, but, you know, it was that running joke, right, on all social media, the meme that was going around that said if you told an SEC football fan that if they wore their mask for 6 weeks, they'd get their football back, and a lot of people haven't done that. And it is what it is, and this thing got politicized, and it's just crazy to me. Greg Sankey said it to us on Marty McGee just a couple weekends ago when he now infamously, famously threw out that he was not – super optimistic about a season happening this year. And the reason was because, you know, somehow or another, what you needed to do for your health or for the health of those around you turned into a political thing, as everything does these days. And as a result, you know, I put the chances of us starting the football season at maybe 50% and completing the football season at less than that.
So if you were made commissioner of this sport, which I would be in favor. I'd vote for you, by the way.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you could just say, "Hey, let's move this to the spring. Maybe there'll be a vaccine, better treatments, a chance for more fans, or let's push through right now and see what we can do." What would your decision be?
I'm a spring. I'm all about playing it in the winter and spring. I want it in the fall. There's no one that wants it in the fall more than I do, but. What everyone I talk to about this, whether it's a coach, whether it's Greg Sankey, whether it's medical experts, everyone I've talked to about this, they all say the same thing and have been told the same thing, which is, you know, you have to put time on your side. And the most time you can take, then, you know, the better off you're going to be. And so, you know, I get the concerns. Now you're talking about guys are going to opt out and they're not going to play and, you know, it's going to run into, you know, NFL draft prep and, you know, it takes everyone out of their physical recovery cycle to get ready for a fall season. I get all that. But there's a lot of really, really smart people in charge of these athletic departments. And so there's no question in my mind you can make it work. And it goes back to, you know, the column I appreciate you bringing up from last week, which was you can't keep clinging to the way you've always done it. Because if we've learned nothing else in 2020, if you don't adjust, then, you know, things aren't going to work out for you.
No doubt. Ryan, tell me about Sidelines and Bloodlines. Very a cool childhood for you growing up the son of a college football official.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you mentioning it. We got a book coming out in about a month, September 15th. I co-wrote a book with my father and my brother, and my dad was a college football official at the FBS level for a few decades. And so, yeah, my first sideline credentials when I was 13 years old. And that day I got completely wiped out, got completely crushed by a linebacker standing on the sideline with my camera. And everybody thought I was dead, and all I could think was, I have to figure out how to get paid to do this for a living. And knock on wood, figured it out. So, yeah, you know, if you've ever wondered what in the world is the coach screaming at the referee and what is the referee saying back to the coach, you know, those are the stories that my dad tells. And then my brother and I tell the stories about what it was like as a kid sitting in the grandstands listening to, you know, 65,000 people say that your dad was, you know, a blind, lost idiot. And it was quite the way to learn football growing up, and I'm excited about it. We're real happy about how it turned out, and, you know, maybe we'll humanize officials a little bit. I'm not expecting anyone to read a book and go, oh, hey, I love referees now. But, but I think they'll at least maybe respect them a little more.
Absolutely. Ryan McGee from ESPN has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Ryan, good stuff, man. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, boys. Stay safe.
You too.
Thanks, Ryan.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit more of what Ryan had to say there and also get into that Pac-12 conversation you brought up, Joe, about the demands the players have made. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
An unprecedented and very fluid situation. The conference saying it hasn't even heard formally from this group. So where do things stand right now as the conference tries to react?
Well, Kenny, the next step is for the group to formally contact the conference and begin some type of negotiation. Many of the players, you're telling us that they plan to participate in the enhanced summer access period, the 20-hour of week a stretch, which will begin for many Pac-12 schools on Monday. But the hope is to meet these demands by the start of training camp, or that's when, for many of these players, they say they will formally opt out of team activities, obviously opt out of the season. So the next 2 weeks are very important, but the first step is to make contact with the Pac-12. Source in the league telling me that the league likely will make a statement more publicly on Monday after a brief one on Saturday when we broke our story on ESPN about this movement that was starting.
That was Adam Rittenberg talking about the situation brewing in the Pac-12 with the players coming out, I believe yesterday, Joe, on the Players Tribune with a piece called hashtag We Are United, basically in that piece writing a letter to the Pac-12 saying, you know, they're threatening to opt out of camp and games unless, you know, demands of fair treatment and safety regulations with COVID and other concerns over racial justice for college athletes are met by the conference. So some strong words out there by some players from the Pac-12. When you read this piece from the Players Tribune and everything that was put out there yesterday, what's your initial reaction to it? And do you think other conferences and players in other conferences could follow suit with something similar sometime this week?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, but I think this is just the latest example of college athletes, and in particular college football players, kind of realizing that they have more leverage and voice than maybe they did before. And if you go through all these demands, I mean, a lot of them are dead on and absolutely you know, should be satisfied. A couple of them simply can't be, which is going to make this interesting if it's going to be like a we're opting out if you don't do this. I mean, I always look at stuff like this as just with anything. There's a negotiation and
sure.
And with discussion here, I mean, look, 50% of the sports total conference revenue distributed evenly among athletes. I mean, that can't even happen. I mean, Title IX prevents that from happening.
Right.
So right off the bat, like, that's not happening. Now, they said the freedom to earn money off name, image, likeness, that is happening. It's slow, and the NCAA is going to try to cap it and limit it and argue against it. But it is happening because states have passed those measures and more will. You know, the stuff that I find fascinating is like Larry Scott and administrators to voluntarily and drastically reduce their excessive pay. I mean, I love that.
Yeah.
Larry Scott, you are taking
You're
a huge pay
much
cut,
money, buddy.
Time
to cut some of that back.
I love end performance / academic bonuses. That always really, of all, there's so many parts of this racket of college sports. That I found galling, but that's one of them too, is like, you know, the coach gets like the $250,000 bonus if the team gets their GP. Like, that just sits wrong. How could that not sit wrong with you? And the lavish facility expenditures and use some endowment funds to preserve all sports. See, this is not just about college football and the ridiculous pay for coaches and administrators and all that stuff. This is also about the larger business of college in this country. As a parent with kids getting close to that age, and I'm looking at what we're about to be, you know, how much I'm going to spend for books,
yeah,
let alone like the fraction of their college. I mean, it is an incredible industry that has gone out of control to me. And I love that they're saying use endowment funds to like bring back sports. For example, Stanford cut 11 sports. All these opportunities for kids lost right now while they have a $27.7 billion endowment. Now, let me just tell you something right now, Robbie. That has not happened. No. They are not touching the endowment. But I like that they brought some of this out. I mean, hey, good for them. I just don't know where this is going because they're not going to get all these things. And so then if they do opt out, I mean, they're hurting themselves. That's the hard part here. This is also, by the way, at least partially organized by the lawyer who tried to do this with Northwestern a few years ago. That did not work. And actually, that turned out to be sort of exaggerated in how much support he had from that team. So it sounds like there's a lot of players in the Pac-12 who didn't even know about this coming, but enough of them have come together to put out a statement. At least it brings some of these issues to light. I just don't know where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, and you know, there are a couple of interesting things in here that they've mentioned. Like, for instance, because we are prohibited from securing representation while being asked to sign documents that may serve as liability waivers. I mean, that's an interesting point where you're a college kid, you're not allowed to have any form of representation, and you're signing stuff that, let's be honest, like, if you're like me or like most people, you see all that fine print, and you're like, yeah, you know, I'll just sign it. Why not? Let's just go. And then you don't really know what you've signed at that point. Like, there's a whole lot of things that go into that part of it. And then, you know, the not feeling comfortable to play this season should be free to opt out without losing their scholarship
and
or
that's
any
already,
eligibility. And I think that's been agreed
that's
to.
That's already
going to
happen. Yes.
So there are things in here that have happened and that I think are good ideas to have. And like you said, though, also some demands that probably have no chance of happening whatsoever. But the larger point of this to me is what you mentioned to start off this segment, and that is college football players and college athletes realizing that now more than ever, their voice matters and that their voice is powerful. And I'm interested to see, now that players in the Pac-12 have done this, do we see something like this come out of the SEC, for instance? Do SEC players get together and put something like this together? How seriously are Pac-12 players about this opting out if some of these things don't happen? So just a really interesting list put there together, and I'm interested to see if other conferences follow suit, because especially now in the world of college football, players that are that age in the college age group, it can be a domino effect. They can follow suit with, with things like this after they see other members of other conferences and their peers do it.
I mean, those people that are immediately going to say, oh, you get free college and look at these facilities and all this stuff, and that's fine. I would never argue that there's not a benefit for, you know, college football players. I would argue, though, you know, they put in so many hours. There is so much expected of them, and very, very few of them go on to play professionally. Meanwhile, millions and millions of dollars are spent on facilities to lure them, and also on facilities that really highlight the NFL potential if you come to our school, which always hit me wrong too, because again, it's such a tiny fraction of these players who are ever going to go make any kind of significant money in the NFL, but it's sold to them like, come here.
You come here, you'll be in the NFL, baby.
I mean, some of these ideas absolutely should be in place. 6-year athletic scholarships so that they can complete degrees. They've medical insurance for 6 years after college eligibility ends. That's not going to happen, but I like the idea of insurance beyond, you know, when you're playing. You know, the one-time transfer. Even just something that we've seen this spring, Robbie, which is, you know, you look at Iowa and some of these other programs that have really come under the microscope. Yep. And, you know, that like, players aren't even allowed to tweet, you know? And just you think about the level of control that has been exercised over these players. And whether you like it or not, and I hear you that there is a benefit, it is still unpaid labor in a massively financially productive industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of these things really are like no-brainers that already should be in place. I'll be interested to see what the Pac-12 says today, probably not a lot, and then how this goes back and forth. And also how many other players, you mentioned other leagues, and that's interesting. Will that happen? How many guys even in the Pac-12 have kind of signed on for this?
Right. I mean,
there's some compelling statements in the release they put out. There's also Rolovich, the Washington State coach, was taped on a phone call last night by one of his receivers who – and basically, he told him, Rolovich told him, like, if you're part of this group, then basically, like, you're off the team.
Right.
So now I can promise you he's off the team because he taped his coach and he released it to the Dallas Morning News.
Yeah, that's not going to go well.
But this is the SEC call, the Washington Post, Robert Klemko did a great job getting the transcript of that call. I mean, a lot of these players are also realizing that they can bring these things to light and kind of expose the hypocrisy that they are experiencing from the power structure. So it's just a lot of stuff happening at once.
And that's why I said last week on the show we were talking about name, image, and likeness and how, you know, under normal circumstances heading into college football, heading into, I don't know, SEC media days, that topic, name, image, and likeness, would have been a dominant topic of conversation heading into those settings. Obviously, things are different now with COVID and everything that's come up since then. But the name, image, and likeness part of this, it's not going away. This is going to be a conversation that continues to happen surrounding the NCAA.
Well, that's a great point. And when I look at something like this, what I hope, look, they're not going to, like 50% of revenues, it's not happening. It's not, they can't set up a pay for play. It's not possible. But what I hope things like this do is push the name, image, likeness to where it should be. And it really should be free market. It really should be. I mean, people are like, oh, boosters are going to – yeah, what do they do now?
Yeah, like how different do you think it's going to be?
It's going to be crazy. People are going to be paying people to come play for their school. No kidding.
Yeah.
You think so?
Think that may happen?
There's not going to be competitive balance. Oh, my gosh, Alabama and Clemson are going to get all the good players. What are we going to do? It's so stupid. I mean, all the arguments against name, image, likeness are just moronic. So I hope something like this – will at least push that to a place of more power because it should be a true open market. The NCAA is trying to, of course, trying to make it as tight and limited and capped as possible and pretend like they have any sort of ability to actually oversee their sport when we all know that they, in fact, have no ability to do that.
And selfishly speaking, from a name, image, and likeness standpoint, and Munson, you probably agree with me on this, let's get this thing figured out and bring back my college football video game.
There,
I would love
see?
That.
See, if that's what it takes to get people behind it, great.
I'm all for it.
It will. Trust me. we'll bring back NCAA football. It just, yeah.
Yeah.
We just got to get this approval. Oh, okay, cool.
Okay, let's do it.
Hurry up. Make it happen.
Fine, yeah.
Man, come on. It's already August, and I'm not even playing a game. Come on. Let's go. This is around the time that I'm supposed to be playing NCAA football, and I have no NCAA football.
What was the last year of that?
14, I think.
Yeah. I think Denard Robinson.
Denard Robinson's on cover.
Yeah, he was the last one on the cover.
But not really Denard Robinson.
Yeah, some guy.
No.
Michigan
no,
like quarterback.
See, no, here's how they get away with it. For the cover, it's usually guys that are going into the draft.
Right.
NFL. Denard Robinson was already in the NFL, and they put him on the cover of it. So, like this year, if they would have came out with a game, it would have been like Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So that's how they get away with it. Like, hey, you're on the cover of the game, but you're already pro, so we can pay you. But it is. That game was always weird because it was like Texas A&M quarterback number 2.
Yeah.
He has like a 99 speed. I'm like,
that's Johnny Manziel, but you can't say it.
He's short and he's from Texas. And it's like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's Johnny Manziel. I'm like, a Hawaiian quarterback number 13, yeah. Alabama. I'm like, that's probably Tua.
Probably Tua.
I mean, it is. Yeah. You think about that. It's just amazing that they went for so long doing it. Like, or the jerseys, whoever the star quarterback is in your whatever college town, it's everybody's wearing that
16 orange jerseys.
Nope.
Yeah.
This is a random number we're selling. I don't know. He doesn't get any of the money. But, hey, people like number 3. I don't know why.
I don't know why. Yeah. Crazy to figure that out, huh?
What a racket, man.
When we come back, we'll dive back in the Preds. Also take your reaction from game 1 and their loss to Arizona. 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls and your text messages at 615-737-1025. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 1025 The Game. Stream 1025 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 1025 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode.
Breakdancing music.
I know, the immediate eye roll from Munson.
Yeah, that was awful.
What? How could you?
What is that, from Breaking? What is that?
It's right around that time. Jam On It by Nucleus. I was one of the main breakdancing songs I would practice too on my cardboard little thing.
And, you know how much money I would have paid to watch you do this?
I mean, there's certainly photos out there. I don't know if there's any video, but parachute pants and the whole deal. I was okay.
Yes.
I was all right.
Can we bring this back? Is there any chance of you getting back into this world?
Well, I'm known at weddings. I've, you know, at some weddings, but that was a few pounds ago, man. You don't want to mess around with it.
Joe
cuts a few rugs.
He cuts a few rugs at weddings.
Like, out the break dancing.
As people are jumping the broom, Joe is cutting the rugs.
Like, you guys know how, you know, I'm sure both of you have probably gone to a lot of weddings.
Yep.
You know, like college friends and stuff get married. You just got married. So during that time of life, we had a bunch of friends' weddings and stuff, that it became a thing. Like, oh, it's your breakdancing time. Let's see what you got. I could still kind of hang a little bit, but yeah, now it'd be that'd be some kind of torn ligament.
We'd have to have an ambulance on standby, is what you're saying.
But Jam On It by Nucleus. I mean, that's a good bump.
I mean,
that's a good bump song.
It's cool. It's just the weird noises and
like the little wiki.
I think we're on like a 3-day streak here where Munson doesn't like your music that you've selected, and I think
is
he likes.
Right?
I think he likes mine.
Why? What else did you not like?
No, I don't think it's a 3.
Maybe 2-day.
It made it.
All right. I'll,
today
I'll,
might just be
together.
The day that he just like grinded my gears with the bump music.
I've got more breakdancing. I mean, I got some Houdini. You know,
we're gonna play World Class Wrecking Crew next. Like, what's going on with you, Joe?
The Get Fresh Crew. I mean, there's a lot out there, man.
I don't know if you guys have seen this, but The Rock has purchased the XFL for $15 million. That seems like a bargain for The Rock. Like, he could turn this thing into a financial powerhouse.
That is so cheap.
$15 million.
Yeah, it's
for
funny
the XFL.
How we can call that cheap, but
yeah,
you know,
I know. Right?
I don't have $15
for a league, man. Wow. What
for
do you think? What do you think The Rock will do with it? Maybe he'll turn it around, huh?
Maybe he'll turn it into ballers.
Munson had a great idea.
Ballers in real life.
Yeah.
Munson's like, look, you just go to the NFL, make an affiliate league. You can make money from there.
Yeah, just like, I don't get why you just don't. You know, and I'm doing like the Patrick gif. Like, you ever seen the gif? Who's like, you just take this and then you move it over here. Like, so just take the NFL, the XFL, you use this as a developmental league for a guy, because you're already paying these guys the same amount of money that you're paying like G League players in the NBA. So just go ahead and get XFL players and then just give each team an affiliate, just like the NBA has, a developmental, you know, affiliate, and then make it that. Yeah, they can play in the spring or the summer, or are they? Well, obviously, they'll probably have to play around the same time as the NFL because that's what the G League is. It basically plays in the same time span as the NBA, and the G League ends before the NBA playoffs begin.
You can play on Wednesday nights, baby.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody playing on Wednesday.
NFL will have no interest in that. Zero interest.
But why?
Because they have a developmental league. It's just what we were just talking about, the unpaid labor of college football. They have got the best minor league system in the world, and they, why would they want to be affiliated with this stuff?
But what about those guys that don't get drafted? What about those guys that
– I feel for them too, but I'm just saying the NFL will have no interest.
Because I think that was one of the initiatives in that piece was that they're allowed to – they want to be allowed to go their junior year, go to the draft, and if they go undrafted, then they can have the choice to come back to
school. Have more time, which they should be allowed to.
Look. Because I know from Nick Saban's purpose, he tells players, if you don't have a first or a second round grade, you need to come back to school. And you need to at least attempt to get your degree or boost your draft stock.
Yeah, but some guys need to make money right now. I mean.
And I understand that completely, but you're running the risk of going undrafted. So that's why it's very important to look at your grade before you actually make that decision to stay.
That's fine, but people make mistakes or they get bad advice and they go. And if we have name, image, likeness, and now you can go make money off a commercial. That means you can have an agent, too. That means an agent can pay you money. So then who cares? If you go and it doesn't work out, then to me, that opens the door for them to come back. I mean, people make mistakes all the time, get bad advice all the time, so now they're just screwed. I mean, I think that's part of all these things that absolutely should be in place.
But at least if you have that system like the XFL that can be like the G League, like it is, because there's a lot of G League players that either skip college, they go play overseas for a year, and then they go to the G League. And then there's some guys who go undrafted, and then they play on the summer league team. They impress the team so much that they get on a G League roster, and then they improve, and then they make it to a team. And
like somebody, I don't hate it. I just don't think the NFL will go for it.
Some guys just take longer to develop. Like with the Miami Heat, right? There's a guy named Kendrick Nunn who's in the G League for like 2 years, and now he's like their second best player. Like, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, like, look at guys.
Sure.
Like, even look at guys from a local perspective. I'm pretty sure, like, and this is no knocking Scottie Pippen Jr. I mean, he's going to be a good player, but, like, he's probably going to go to the G League. That's probably going to be his fate. You look at guys like Admiral Schofield, who played a little bit in the G League for the Wizards. You look at a guy like Jordan Bone, who probably wouldn't have got that opportunity if it was just, if the NBA didn't have that league, that G League system that he can play in. You know, so I think that's just what the NFL needs, because we see Hard Knocks, we watch it, and it's the sad reality of football where we watch these guys have to clean out their locker undrafted. They tell their stories on Hard Knocks, and then all of a sudden
they're done.
They're done. They're off a team, and it's just it's crushing to see. But if they have that system, at least they can go play for a team like on an XFL team, and they can work their way up back to a roster. And so I think that's just a perfect way to do it. And like look at a guy like Cole McDonald, for example. Like, have him – if you want to develop him or Logan Woodside, they could have been playing there. They could have been playing developmental basketball.
And then, like you said, Tuesday or Wednesday nights, you can watch Cole McDonald for the Jackson Titans. The Jackson Showboats or whatever. And
you know, it just makes it easier.
I'm not against it. I just don't think the NFL will have any interest. But
yeah, they probably won't. Because the NFL
I mean, look, I'm an old USFL fan, so I want some kind of a spring football league to work, because I think like there should be a market for that. And the USFL, now of course the USFL is getting NFL guys early on before Donald Trump destroyed the league, but I mean that league actually had a chance, and after a couple years it really had something, and I still feel like there's a spring league that could work out there.
The main thing that stood out to me in this story was just buying the league for $15 million. Like, what do we think? I have it in front of me, so I'm not going to guess. Take a guess at what The Rock's net worth is, estimated net worth.
$800 million.
Okay.
I'm going to go $400 million.
You're close. It's $320. Estimated. Yeah. No, this is estimated. You never know.
But yeah.
But
I mean,
$15 million for a league.
Yeah.
You don't see that often.
Because, look. And The Rock is smart, because The Rock is, guess what, a former wrestler.
Yes.
Vince McMahon is the owner of World Wrestling Entertainment, where The Rock used to play. Rock knows how Vince handles business because he worked under Vince for half of his career.
Yes.
So he's probably like, look, I know Vince, and look,
he struggles sometimes.
He struggles with business decisions sometimes, and this is a business move that I can turn into something profitable because the people want it. He just doesn't know how to manage it because he also has wrestling that he's focused on,
yep,
and their ratings are sinking. And so he's like, I'm going to go ahead and take this off your hands, Vince, and I'll take care of it. I'll put my name on it, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, XFL, and I'll have my name on it. There'll be non-sports fans that will probably be into it as well because it's me. Everybody loves me. I'm The Rock. So, you know, just bring it, eyebrow raises, whatever. So I could put my name on this, and then we can build this, and it could be profitable because the last two times you've done it has not been profitable.
Is he going to pull, like, stunts at the games? Like, at halftime, is he going to descend down from a helicopter and do his thing there, do backflips? You see him working out with P.K. Subban the other day, by the way?
No.
Yeah, The Rock and P.K. Subban have been working out, and P.K. is, like, standing next to him, and he looks like an 11-year-old kid. It's unbelievable.
P.K.'s tweeted out some other workout videos of him. You know,
yeah. Well, they're not playing. He's just beefing up for next year.
Yeah. But no, I didn't see that. Yeah, I'm sure it's interesting with The Rock in this. I could see it's a really pennies on the dollar investment to buy a league. Not convinced he's going to end up, you know, getting the payoff for it, but I'm intrigued by it. I think he could do something.
Now, if we see Kevin Hart coaching one of these XFL teams,
it's time to get out.
Then we know that this is just a bad investment.
Well, it just means, you know, if it doesn't work out, you just got to go make another Fast and Furious movie. I mean, they're on like 16 right now. So what's another one?
I've never seen any of those.
Well, you got a lot to catch up on.
Here's hot take, Marquise of the day. Fast and Furious is the most overrated franchise in movies.
Totally agree.
How many do they really have?
I've lost count.
I think they're on like 9.
Yeah, they're up to 9 or 10 for sure.
I did see the Jumanji sequel that had The Rock at the theater with my kids. That was okay.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin Hart.
Big fan of their first
one. But see, Jumanji to me is a lot like, you know, with Aladdin. It's like, it's hard to beat Robin Williams because Robin Williams was in the original Jumanji. So it's like, it's hard for me to look at anybody else in that Jumanji movie outside of Robin Williams.
It is, but I thought the first one, like the first remake they did, really good.
Yeah.
The second one's okay.
They still kind of tied it to the Robin Williams character and everything. Yeah.
It's good. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and get into the Preds, their loss in game one, and what we're looking to springboard them into game two. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through this Monday morning. Joe, a tough loss yesterday for the Preds in game one. Looking ahead to game two tomorrow against Arizona. And I look back to game one, Joe, and the question keeps coming up, like, why is it that when things go poorly for this group, they have a bad break go against them, a tough call, a fluky goal like they had yesterday. Why is it that that seems to just rattle them for, you know, Darren called it an 8-minute period, 10-minute, 12-minute, whatever the case may be, a certain amount of time after something bad happens, it just seems like the wheels fall off and it takes them a while to get them back on the right track. Why do we think that is?
Well, there's certainly something lacking there. And this predates John Hines. I think it's a big part of why John Hines is here.
Yep.
Now, does that mean John Hines can't be expected to try to figure it out? No. But a lot of this has to go on the players. And there are too many guys who have played too much important hockey and who have done well in important hockey on this team playing together for that to be a thing. Yet it is a thing. So I think some people will say, okay, the captain, I've heard it a lot. I wrote a column for The Athletic about Roman Josi a few months ago with that topic because it was I think when they were going through bad stretches especially. I heard that a lot from fans.
It was a prevalent theme, yeah.
You know, I honestly think with Roman Josi, he's a super nice guy who could absolutely front a boy band. And so people automatically think less of him in that role.
They just like, but assume I don't think he's soft or something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. I don't think it's fair. But look, I think anything can be on the table when a team struggles like this. I think it's collectively a lot of these key guys you know, figuring it out, talking to each other, whatever they have to do, and then performing and not letting 8, 10, 12 minutes of subpar hockey creep into a playoff game, because that's what happened yesterday. That game was lost. We all knew. I knew. You knew that it was over when it was 3-0 because they just stopped playing. And good for them for fighting back and all that. But if you're going to have those stretches, you're done real early here.
I got to thinking about this last night when I, you know, and this is not just yesterday. I want to clarify this before I get rolling here, but this is not just having to do with yesterday. This has been a long process with this group of what I'm about to say here. And I think I've been just probably as guilty of this as anybody else. We've made a whole lot of excuses for this group. We put it on coaching. We put it on, you know, the teams are going up against all these different things. We put it on, you know, contract situations. It's time for these players to step up, or you're going to have to move on. I mean, that's what it boils down to. This core group with Johansson and Forsberg, Arvidsson, Josi, Ellis, Sisson, I mean, we can go on and on down the list of the core group. They've been together for a long time. They played a lot of hockey together. And, you know, we've just kind of been talking about how good they are and how much talent they have and all these things for the last 3 years since they made that run to the Cup final. That's great. I believe they are talented. I believe they are good. I believe they do have the ingredients to win and win at a high level. It's on them now. I'm done with the excuses. I'm done blaming it on coaches. I'm done blaming it on anything else other than these guys in the locker room. It's on them. So whatever happens in this series, they very well could come back and win tomorrow, win game two, beat Arizona in this series, and then move on and have a good playoff run. They could do that. Absolutely. I don't know. But I'm done making excuses for this group. It's on this core group of players to get the job done. You've been paid. The talent is there. We've seen you do it at different times before. It's on you to go produce. And I just got to thinking, you know, I'm tired of the excuses with this group. It's on them. Go win. You've been given every opportunity to do it. Go perform.
You know, it doesn't matter now because he's gone. And I know they lost the last series with him on the team, and everyone knew it was probably it for him. But I do think this team misses the swagger, the intensity, the physicality of PK Subban. I think that was a big part of that 2017 run. He was sort of – he was the guy who would say, we're going to win the next game when they lost a tough one. He was the guy talking trash to Sidney Crosby. He and Ekholm were usually the guys who were bodying up the top. I mean, they do miss – a presence like that, and I think they could use someone to step forward and be like that. And if I had to pick a candidate, it would be either Johansson or Forsberg.
Yep.
Because those guys, because they can play heavy like that, and also because they are really good players. I think that's overlooked. There's a lot of, okay, good riddance, and I understand Subban may be on the downside of his career. But he did give them an edge,
yeah,
especially in those two postseasons that I think they've lacked. But again, okay, he's gone. Move on. You have more than enough guys who should be able to figure this out and not let these things happen, these stupid penalties and these subpar shifts and just this sort of collective slumping of the shoulders when something you give some bad luck. You're going to have bad luck. There's going to be another fluky, weird goal you give up. What are you going to do? You're going to fade away for 10 minutes? Again, you're not playing hockey past this week if that's the case.
Yeah, and not to mention, you got a fluky goal back. I mean, Forsberg's first goal bounced in off a Coyote. It was a good shot.
With 2 seconds left in the first period.
With 2 seconds left in the first period. That shot goes wide. It's 3-0 after one. You're out of it at that point. In most cases, out of it at that point. So the pushback's got to be there. And I keep saying this. I said it all day on Twitter yesterday. They got to find a way to make life more difficult on whether it's Arizona, whoever they're playing. Make life more difficult in front of the net. You can't have guys just camping out in front of the net and expect your goaltender to be able to make all those saves. Like I said, Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, I think they're great defensemen. They are very, very good. Probably both top 20 defensemen in the league. Roman Josi, you can make a case, the best defenseman in the league. Put a body on somebody. Get them out of the way. You can't just sit there and let – you know, Dvorak, take whacks at your goalie. You can't let Clayton Keller sit there in the middle of the slot untouched. And there's a physical element to that, obviously, when it comes to moving out of the way and getting your head down and moving to the front of the net. and putting bodies on people. But to me, that's more mentality than anything else. You got to say, look, there is no way in the world I'm letting you come in here. Like yesterday, I think Colton Sissons like barely bumped into Darcy Kuemper, and the Coyotes just went nuts. I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson was punching him in the face. They went behind the net. How often does that happen if somebody comes near UC Saros or Pecorine? Not very often. I'm not saying it's the be-all, end-all, but to me, that just kind of signals an engagement level that you're ready to go. That's got to happen more often with this group than it does.
Yeah, there's something to that, no doubt about it. Do you think it helped the Coyotes in a way that with Schmaltz out, now they put Kessel and Taylor Hall together? Yep. I mean, obviously that line was a problem, and normally those guys are separated.
Oh, I think it helped for sure, but I think if you're the Predators, you know that's going to be a challenge defending that group. I think it should help your matchups everywhere else that you don't have Kessel and Hall spaced out like that. Because, look, Clayton Keller's a good player. Dvorak's a good player. They got a lot of good players on Arizona. Hall and Kessel are your threats. Those are the guys that you better be aware of every second of the time that they're on the ice. That should help your matchups with other guys that you're supposed to go out there and win. You're supposed to go out there and win those matchups and dominate those matchups. So, yeah, I think it was a good move by Tockett to put them together, and they certainly played really well together yesterday. I would expect that to continue when they come back tomorrow. But to me, if you're the Predators, your depth should shine through in that position.
I mean, Ryan Ellis can't let Taylor Hall go.
No.
That's what he did on the second goal. Ryan Ellis, he was the closest guy there. I mean, he and Bonino both kind of left the area, but Clayton Keller's just alone in the slot on the power play.
Can't happen.
Like how does that happen? So for the penalties get a lot of attention, understandably so, but those little moments in the Forsberg turnover that gives them a gimme, those things will end this quickly.
And now you've put yourself into what is essentially a must-win game tomorrow in Game 2 in the best-of-five series. Looking forward to that. We'll talk about that a lot tomorrow on the show. Joseph, good show today, my friend.
Good show.
Absolutely. For Joe Rexroth and Marquise Munson, I'm Robbie Stanley. This has been Morning Drive. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.